Awesome track. Speaking of track.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Associate Professor Dr. Jennifer Curtin, Associate Professor Jennifer Curtin, sorry, hello, good morning, how are you? I missed you at the Christmas party, I'm sorry, I missed you, I missed you at the Christmas party, I meant to say hi, but I missed you there.
Oh, no problem, Happy New Year.
Happy 2018 to you. Well, I'll tell you, enough punnery about the year. Jennifer, it's a new year. It's a fresh start with a fresh government. We've put all this election hubbub behind us, all the Todd Barclays and the Simon Bill Englishes behind us. It's a new government now. We're ready to start again. We're in the 100 days. We've got everything up and running. Then there was a break. And now we're back. And did we miss anything here while everyone was on holiday? Is there something, anything's gone on here or outside of New Zealand that you think that maybe we needed to be attentive to that we hadn't really, no one's really picked up on?
Well, I'm not sure there was really. I think most people were just ready for a break. It was, like you say, pretty tumultuous, and the post-election stuff went on for so long. The only thing is that there's lots of rumours going around that the bureaucrats in Wellington were definitely ready for a break because the whole 100-day agenda is so large and keeping everybody so busy, and that they're kind of running around like headless chickens. So I'm sure a lot of them were really ready for a break as well.
Do you think the government are doing everything they can to impress people, or doing everything they can to actually get things moving, which is...
Oh, probably a bit of both. You know, they have got quite a suite of things on their 100-day pledge, and there's already a lot of discussion, even yesterday, I think, or the day before, Peter Dunn coming out talking about some of the things that are on their 100-day promise list as just being, you know, too much too soon and underthought. But, you know, this has been a thing, these 100-day tick boxes, and it's true they've probably stretched themselves, but that's something to, you know, it's kind of like a scorecard that exists in New Zealand politics now, and so if they were looking at just very superficial ones, they'd get criticised for that as well. So it's a bit of a no-win or a win-win, depending on what happens at the end of the 100 days.
Like, to keep your sports analogy going, when did Peter Dunn get to end up with the prime job of commentator all of a sudden?
Well, isn't that what happens when they leave Parliament?
Yeah.
I mean, we're still getting Rodney Hyde commentating and Richard Preble. We see quite a few of them popping up. So I think
they left a while ago, though. You know, they just left. He just left, and he's straight into it.
Yeah, well, I think the medicinal cannabis thing for him is, you know, as Associate Minister for Health, is probably a little bit dear to his heart in some way.
That was pretty close to Christmas when that all went down. Do you think that we hit the mark there, or do you think that it was a bit of a limp position from the government in the end?
Well, I think the issue will come down to, yes, even if the bill gets passed, how long is it going to take for people to be able to get access? And that seems to be what the issue is here.
Right, right. Now, Jim Anderson passed away over the break, though. What a nice man Jim Anderson is. I mean, whether you liked his politics or not, at least he had some politics. And he, you know, I thought he's a really lovely guy. I was telling the story the other day, but when he came in the studio here at BFM, I asked him, I tried to catch him out and say, do you know all the words of the New Zealand National Anthem, eh, Jim? And he's like, yep, stood up and just put his hands on his heart and sung them full volume from start to finish. Quite weird. It was a weird situation, but it was impressive, you know.
Well, I met him back in 1989, actually, because as a student, back in the day, there were a bunch of us who'd set up our own sort of breakaway party that was anti-neoliberal politics in Hamilton. And he was very kind. He'd set up New Labour, and he came down to the campus. That was part of Champion New Labour more generally. But he met with us and talked about what we might have in common and did we want to join up with his party. And I think that 1989 moment for those who weren't in Parliament was a really important one for people who wanted to still believe there was a place for non-neoliberal Rogernomics left in New Zealand politics.
Because it was a scary time, wasn't it? The wheels started to really fall off.
Yeah.
And take us places that we'd never imagined.
Well, and that was the thing. I mean, the 1987 election then, Labour ran on a sort of like a secret manifesto So those who were over Muldoon, you know, trusted Labor again to do the right thing in their second term. And there was just, you know, they did. They just moved so far to the right on things economic that a lot of people just felt completely disillusioned with the left. And if Anderton hadn't set up New Labor, you'd wonder where those voters would have gone. Of course, it also helped get us MMP, which ultimately was a good thing.
Yeah, and so how would you describe Jim Anderton as a politician? Definitely a statesman.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, he really grew into that role of Deputy Prime Minister under Clark, and I think
he was a great Deputy Prime Minister, I thought.
Yeah, and the fact that against his name we see specific policy achievements. Not everyone who's not the Prime Minister can do that, right? That they can say, well, I got Kiwi Bank and I got the New Zealand Super Fund sorted with Michael Cullen. So these are really, you know, he was a principled pragmatist, if those two things can go together. You know, he sort of retained really core values but was also in the end able to adapt to new political times and deliver. It's going to be a good legacy, for him.
It is a great legacy too. And I remember when I first became very aware of him and met him the first couple of times, he and his family were going through some pretty tragic and difficult times. And he, I won't go into detail, but he powered through, and his beliefs remained the same the whole way through. And he's a solid individual, you know.
Yeah, and
shameless to go.
And everybody mentioned that he gave a voice to the voiceless, and I think, you know, having his own personal issues to deal with, but also those core Labor values meant that was what, you know, he kind of understood very clearly what those who were marginalised would have needed Labor to do for them. And the other thing that gets mentioned a little less is that he was really critical to reforming the Labor Party organisation and dragging it out of that sort of old boys type socialist kind of organisational culture and into something that was more embracing of what sort of negative pundits call identity politics or something. But
well, yeah, he gave them
the party to be more inclusive of women, of Māori, of Pacifica, in the late 70s and early 80s, and that was really important.
Yeah, he said to the party, from the way I perceive it anyway, that, you know, take a look at yourselves. Are you representing, are the people you're asking to vote for you, are they represented in your party?
Absolutely, and he was a really important mentor to Helen Clark.
Very
even
much
though
so.
They fell out. That, you know, no doubt. There's no doubt. That
the respect's
he
still
was
there.
Really,
yeah,
significant in her life as well.
I think it's a very, you know, it's quite timely as well. This happening because it means a lot of some of the newer and younger MPs. Maybe we'll look at there's someone and you know see get a gist on the respect that someone like that can earn when they're in Parliament and actually make it worthwhile, you know?
Absolutely.
Make a job worthwhile.
Reminding them that it's about public service and not just about personal power, I think. You know, good lesson there, that's for sure.
So let's talk about public service and personal power over in the United States of America. on the eve of the book, the tell-all book, or if, no matter you know, how you want to, how much of it you want to believe or how much you want to regard it, then you've got Oprah Winfrey after the Golden Globes not being dismissive at all when people say you should be the president, Oprah Winfrey. Now, I kind of like the idea of that.
Yeah, it's been really interesting how, you know, that one speech has captured the imagination of so many commentators in the US. And I think that, you know, what she represented in that speech and what she represents herself is probably quite inspiring to a lot of people to think about her as a Democratic Party candidate. The only worry I have is around, like, does it entrench celebrity presidentialization, if you like, or, you know, celebritizing the role of president? And then,
at least it gets somebody in the White House who reads.
But does it give too much power to the unelected advisors? You know, you do.
Yeah.
And what happens to understanding whether or not you need public service in order to be a president? You know, or is it enough to sort of be super popular, likable, and a champion of sort of some key causes?
There's not a whole lot of people, though, who can fit.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way is up from Trump, really, surely.
Oh, absolutely. But they do need, I mean, there's a risk to some extent with, she'd get the turnout up. But we have to remember that Clinton won the popular vote. But Trump, you know, you got to still win enough of the states. And those southern states with those good old boys, you know, down there voting Trump.
Racists, you mean? Is that what you're suggesting? Sexists and racists?
They're not necessarily going to move and vote with Oprah, right? You know, so it's...
Sarah and I were talking about this yesterday, and I was like, you know, the thing is with minorities, there's more minorities when you put them all together than there are majorities, you know, than there is the majority.
Yeah.
You know, and
you've got to get them turning out, though, you know, that's the thing. And Obama did it in 2008,
yeah.
So it's definitely possible, but you need them, and, you know, maybe that's what can happen in the southern states where, you know, we know there's a lot of gerrymandering, so a lot of the electorates at the Congress level are drawn around black neighbourhoods and white neighbourhoods, and, you know, maybe the turnout at the state level, you know, would be enough. But I think we're still, you know, they'll make the decision on the candidates sometime in the coming 12 to 18 months. So
yeah.
There's a few names in the mix now to watch, and certainly she'd be popular, that's for sure.
Yeah. In the next couple of months, what do you think we in this country need to be really focused on? What do you think are the things the government should come back and pick up and run with immediately?
Oh, gosh, where do I start? You know, there's still some debate to be had on this law on party hopping because Jim Anderton was a party hopper, if you like. You know, the Waka jumping rule. So
yeah,
there's still a lot of debate that's happening there. And, of course, they're protecting to some degree their very slim majority. On policy terms, it would be really good to see some really strong movement from my perspective on the state care investigation, on the equal pay. You know, it's great to see Iceland has now made it illegal.
Yeah, how about that? Good on you Iceland, know, eh?
Go
global
Iceland.
Leader.
Well, they do very well in the World Cup football, just bring the sport metaphor back in there.
Yeah.
Like every sixth person can play for Iceland. So, you know, there are, but in terms of the substance too, they really have to do some, I suppose, like just continuing to reassure the business community that economic, you know, those standard mantras that those on the centre-right need to hear about economic growth and the fact that the housing market stalled is still going to be okay, and that the, you know, the curb on migration is still means that we're going to grow. So there'll be some sort of beyond the 100-day stuff. They're going to have to really settle the nerves, I suppose.
Hey, Jennifer, thank you so much for talking to us. I look forward to speaking to you again later on in a few weeks' time. Always a pleasure, and have a great 2018. Start the way it was meant to carry on with lots of radio.
Terrific. Thanks, Mikey.
Cool. Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.